The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the programme. It is The Greg Hughes Show. We're with you until 11 o'clock and we've got lots coming up on the show, of course. Great mix of good information for you, big issues, topics that matter to you, all the usual stuff, community got information coming up after 10, that and so much more besides. Let's give you the details as to how you get in touch. We never take it for granted, by the way, how many of you do interact with the programme. And there's new people texting and calling in all the time, which is really, really welcome. Very much appreciated because it is your show. It's your platform. 0860 25000. That's the WhatsApp and the text number. 0860 25000. Give us a call if you wish on 07491 25000 or email comments at highlandradio.com. And if it suits you to watch the show, it's a very visual programme. A lot of our guests are in studio or joining us via video. You can go to the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland, and watch on your mobile devices, your laptop, but also, which is quite important, your smart TV or your Fire Stick, which is great if you want to just watch it in the middle of your front room or wherever, your kitchen. And we're also across Facebook and X2 as well, if that suits you. Right, let's go to the newspapers this morning. And as you can imagine, the awful tragedy down the country continues to dominate the headlines. Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan is considering a new criminal offence for those who drive the wrong way on a motorway. Mr. O'Callaghan was speaking after... after the incident in which five teen boys were killed when the car they were driving the wrong way on the M9 crashed into an oncoming vehicle. For the first time in the state, Gardaí will soon be specially trained in pursuit of stolen vehicles and those driving the wrong way on motorways, a move that would begin this year. Mr. O'Callaghan also noted that the Garda Commissioner had said members would also be using drones for pursuits of stolen vehicles. All right, okay. This is in the Independent, by the way, but also too, very tragically, and it is, a trend on social media, it has to be said, to be stealing cars, to be racing cars, to be trying to avoid the Gardaí. It's very organised, and I'll tell you more about that in a moment. But at least three of the teenagers killed on the M9 in Kildare after crashing head on into an oncoming car had previously bragged online about evading Gardaí by driving on the wrong side of motorways. So I decided to have a look for some of these videos on TikTok. Now, not videos of carnage. I'm not interested in any of that, but just videos of younger people. And I was flabbergasted at how popular it is and how widespread it is on TikTok. And you know the way TikTok works with its algorithms. So I found one or two videos and I watched them for a period of time. And next thing you know, every other video was young people evading Gardaí on scooters, on scramblers, in cars, hot wiring cars, sticking screwdrivers into the barrel of cars. These were all Irish accounts, one after the other, video after video after video. Thousands of likes on these videos, hundreds of comments. It is a whole culture that's going online. And I have to say, TikTok needs to take some serious responsibility here because they are allowing these videos to become popular and viral. And if you watch one of them for any period of time at all, you keep getting these videos. And for these young people, you know, we don't know their backgrounds. We don't know how they've been brought up or what supports they had. This is fame. This is them getting famous. They've got their tag names. They've got their gang names in inverted commas. And the more they risk, the more likes they get, the more danger that they undertake, the more views they get. And, you know, if they're caught, let's face it, you know, the punishment would be next to nothing. So the risk is life. And, you know, when you're young, you don't necessarily know the value of life, or you don't care, or whatever it might be, or you don't think anything could happen. You know, it's an awful situation what's going on. But what I was flabbergasted was the role TikTok is playing in spreading these videos, actively spreading them, to the point now where every second video on my TikTok now is of someone stealing a car, someone joyriding in a car, someone trying to evade Gardaí. And the amount of comments and likes that are on these videos is unbelievable. These people are TikTok famous, and that's driving it, right? So I think one of the first things they can do, obviously at this point now, talking about drones and training Gardaí, important, but the horse is out and the gate is now being closed. The truth is these social media companies need to stop spreading these videos, actively spreading the videos. It's shocking stuff. And as I say, I'm not talking about, you know, gore videos or scenes of crashes or anything like that. This is young people having the time of their lives, in inverted commas, evading Gardaí, hot wiring cars and all that type of stuff. So my focus, if I were trying to deal with this immediately, I'd haul the heads of TikTok, we host them here, I'd haul them into wherever they need to be hauled into and say, do you know what you're doing here? You are literally making these people famous. They're taking risks, and you need to knock it on the head right now. And they could in the blink of an eye. Right, so on to the Irish Daily Mail now. And the number of children being baptised in Ireland has fallen by 30% in 10 years, with Dublin seeing the largest drop. That's a huge drop, almost a third. Data from 23 of the country's 28 dioceses analysed by the Iona Institute and released exclusively to the Irish Daily Mail show the number of children being christened was down almost one-third, while the Archdiocese of Dublin had a 40% decrease. Researchers, research by the religious advocacy group, suggested the change from 2015 to 2025 was driven by falling birth rates and greater numbers of families turning away from the Catholic Church. In the same period, births have fallen by 18.8%, 17.9% in the Republic and 21.3% in the North. This drop accounts for around 60% of the change, with the remainder caused by secularisation. Census data shows that in 2016, 78% of 0 to 4-year-olds were marked by their parents as Catholic, and 9.2% were recorded as having no religion. By 2022, these figures had changed to 65.4% and 15.6% respectively. So 15.6% said their children were not of a religion. Are you surprised by this? Why do you think people are turning away from the church? You know, because there is a whole cohort in there too of those that would go through the christening system but then not attend Mass, or their children wouldn't attend Mass maybe until their Holy Communion. But I think it's interesting where people are making an active decision to not baptise or christen their children. We'll dig in and see. Maybe, Caroline, we might get on to the Iona Institute and get the details of their research into christenings for the Donegal area. It'd be quite interesting to see where we are at. Or maybe it's a decision you've made. And if so, why? Obviously, anonymously, you might see it as private and don't want to talk about it publicly. But just maybe there's a reason why people are doing that. Staying kind of in this same space, appetite for change at religious ethos primary schools is strongest in parts of Dublin and Cork, according to an analysis by the Irish Times. The Department of Education primary school survey of more than 200,000 households was published last April. It found that about 40% of parents who send their children to religious-run schools would like to see a multi-denominational ethos brought in at these schools. But what? I mean, that also means that 60% would like to see the status quo. An analysis of individual school results identifies the schools where the largest vote for change was registered. Partaking in the survey was optional, meaning results at some schools have a high margin of error depending on how many parents responded. Maybe that's the case in Ballyshannon, because there is one school in Ballyshannon that is an outlier. It's a Gaelscoil. And I'm not going to the name is quite a mouthful. I hadn't heard it before, so I'm not going to even try and pronounce it. But it's a Catholic school in Ballyshannon. 51% of people who voted there wanted a multi-denominational school. Now, it may be that in that school, you know, 10 people had a say and 6 were motivated to say, look, we want it to be multi-denominational. It's not exactly that figure, but there you go. So the one outlier in Donegal in that sort of top list is a Gaelscoil in Ballyshannon, whereby over 50% wanted it to become multi-denominational, which is interesting. Right, let's go on to the Sun. And unfortunately, there's no end in sight to the higher oil prices because the rhetoric over there is getting worse. And this is why I read it to you. Donald Trump has threatened to bomb US ally Oman if it gets in the way of a deal with Iran on the Strait of Hormuz. Crazy stuff, because Oman would be the Europe's and the United States' strongest ally over there. The US president made the threat, referring to ongoing talks over control over the shipping route. Trump said, "If Oman gets in the way, we'll blow the S out of them," as he called on Iran to surrender. Iranian and Omani officials have been talking for weeks on future maritime navigation arrangements through the strait. But as I said on the show earlier in the week, while this is ongoing, alternative pipelines are being established all the while. So Iranians' cards in this need to be played sooner, I imagine, rather than later. Bad news for you if you're a Mrs. Brown's Boys fan, because the Mrs. Brown's Boys Christmas and New Year specials have been cancelled as comic Brendan O'Carroll faces an unexpected medical issue involving, of all things, a broken jaw. The creator and star of the show, who's 70, announced that the recordings would not be going ahead as he required immediate surgery. He wrote, "It's with sincere regret I must announce that due to an unexpected medical issue, I will have to cancel the recordings of the 2026 Mrs. Brown Boys Christmas and New Year specials. Following a CT scan, it was found that I had two fractures in my mandible jaw," which is the jaw, "which requires immediate surgery and a few months' recovery." They also had shows in Dublin and Killarney, which were scheduled for later this year, which are being deferred to next year, it would seem. And he says they're in talks with the BBC with a view to that returning in 2027. So if you're a fan of Mrs. Brown's Boys, a bit of disappointment for you there. And a story too here that I've been contacted on social media asking for us to talk about this. And I don't know what your views are in relation to this. So let me set it up. There is a fund there that is available for elected representatives to improve security around their properties. Now, I know for a fact that there are some elected representatives that have received quite specific death threats and threats to their properties, the risk of arson of their homes. And there is a fund there that they can draw down to improve security around their homes. Some people seem to think that that's not a good idea, that it's a ridiculous waste of taxpayers' money. And others disagree. I'll be honest with you, in this day and age whereby there are very polarised views, we have seen, you know, very serious instances of arson in certain premises. I know there have been very legitimate death threats against councillors and threats of arson at their homes. I don't really have a problem with this. I'm just going to be completely honest with you. I think it's small fry in the wider expenditure thing. Whether you agree with local representatives or not, they have put themselves forward. They've been voted in by the people and they have to take positions, whether you agree with them or disagree with them, on certain issues. And there are people out there who will make very credible threats against their lives. They are public servants, so is the responsibility for the state to support them in the security. Honestly, it's €52,000. I think personally, not that it really matters what I think. I think, you know, they're probably entitled to it. I don't begrudge them it. That's probably going to be controversial, but it is what it is, because I know of the threats that they're making and I know they are serving the public. Whether you agree with them or you disagree with them is by, they are serving the public. So eight councillors claimed €52,000 for security measures last year. These are once-off payments, I presume, for motion-activated cameras and recording systems and what have you. So more than €52,000 was spent on security measures for Donegal County councillors last year, with three elected members receiving almost the full €10,000 allowance available under the scheme. So it's a scheme that they can draw down on. Figures released by the council show that eight councillors claimed a combined 52,000 €1 under the security allowance heading in the local authority's register of councillors' allowances and expenditure for January to December 2025. And Thomas Sean Devine, Ali Farron, Martin Farron, Jimmy Kavanagh, Frank McBurty, Patrick McGowan and Declan Meehan were amongst those who drew down money. Councillor Thomas Sean Devine received just shy of 10 grand. Frank McBurty, he got 9,936. Ali Farron, 9,057. And then there were other lower payments for the other councillors that I mentioned. But as I say, you know, it's a fund that is there. And if I were a county councillor, to be honest with you, and I could get in trouble for saying this, I'd probably be drawing it down, especially if I was taking a position on controversial, more controversial topics. I don't know. That's just what I think. I'm open to have my mind influenced one way or other. Of course, there are calls for new laws to tackle the scourge of spiking drinks. We're joined on the programme now by Mary Crilly, Cork Sexual Violence Centre spokesperson. Good morning to you, Mary.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Now, obviously, you know, you're at the coalface here. What are you seeing that has led to you making these calls?
Well, I suppose I'm in the centre over 43 years at this stage. So spiking isn't new. You know, we've come across it so much over the years. But what's happening now is very new and it's very sinister. And there is a game called Take Them Down, you know, where for the sake of it, for the laugh, for entertainment purposes, spiking is happening to everybody. Before, I used to come across it, and we still do, where you want to knock a young woman or a young guy out to sexually assault them. But now it's done for fun. It's done for a laugh. It's done for entertainment. And it's endemic. I mean, we were at Marley Park there just about a month ago. We got about 6,000 signatures for our campaign, but met very few people who wasn't aware of it, who knew about it. We met men in their 50s who had been spiked. We met women in their 50s who had been spiked in rural, in urban areas, everywhere. It's just happening and we need to put an end to it.
Last year, 58 instances of adding alcohol or drugs to someone's drink without their knowledge, often to intoxicate them, as you've mentioned, or indeed harm them, were recorded by Gardaí. Now, this is not to have a go at Gardaí. I suspect this is incredibly underreported because a lot of the contacts we would get on this programme, Mary, would be often it's actually from parents or loved ones of someone whose drink was spiked and it's being believed. You know, the toxicology tests maybe not being nuanced enough to pick it up, or it being put down to, oh, sure, maybe you had too much to drink and you're just blaming spiking. I do think that figure I just read out does not tell the story at all.
Not at all. I mean, we have a spiking hub. We've had it up for a while where we ask people to contact us and give us their story. And it's a complicated enough kind of form, but over 200 people and recently have filled it in, have completed it and told us about it. And one of the reasons why we really need legislation is that hospitals then might do testing. Even up to this morning, receiving emails from a sister of somebody who knew she was spiked and she was left in A&E. She was left there just to dry out because, as you say, they're being believed by families, but they're still not being believed by the authorities sometimes.
Now, you talked about how the fact that this is not new, but we're seeing a new trend where people are being spiked to knock them out effectively. But still, in terms of those reporting sexual assaults to the various treatment hubs, including the one here in Donegal, a high percentage of those presenting do still talk or express a concern that they were spiked before the incident.
They do. I think SATO, the sexual assault treatment units around the country, had something like 1,021 examinations last year, and over 200 of them said they were spiked, and another 180 felt they were spiked. So it is happening. But I mean, what we need to do is all get together and change it, because I really think we can if there's zero tolerance. And I really don't believe in covering your drink. That kind of crap doesn't work. It doesn't happen. You know, you could be around a table. And unfortunately, people look at young girls and think it's going to happen to you, but it's going to happen to the guys as well. Mm. They're around a table. They cover their drink. Somebody who is involved in spiking will say to them, what's your problem? It's only us around the table. So we're all friends here. Or worse, you could be at a wedding. Can you imagine covering your drink at a wedding or at a party where you know anybody, a 50th or a 40th? So there's very subtle ways where, you know, people who are doing this get away with it. It's really an easy crime to get away with. And I also know it's hard to investigate. I also know it might be hard to prove, but even if we got toxicology tests in hospitals where people could, find out what happened, because they are losing their will, they're going mad, they really feel like, was I spiked? Was I not spiked? You have a guy, met a guy recently, a big kind of guy, he's a sports guy, and he felt so disillusioned and so despairing of himself, because it was like, how could this happen to me? I'm a big guy, I should have been able to watch it, or I should have known. And there's a lot of self-blame goes on as well. So we really, I think as a country, if we work together, it's in the plan for government, but you know yourself, there's loads of things in for the plan for government, but if we don't push it, it won't happen. But now is the time.
Yeah, and I always thought, and it was interesting to hear you say, I always thought the, especially when someone sees a marketing opportunity to sell drink covers, that it actually can lead to a false sense of security, because if you use a needle or anything like that there, it's very easy circumvented. So are we talking to, as well as legislation, new laws, a system in place where if someone or someone with someone, if someone or someone with someone attends an ED and believes that they have had their drink spiked, that there is a specific test that covers all of the known substances that can be used for spiking? I don't believe that's the case. Do we need that type of a protocol?
We do, and we were in touch with a woman in the UK, Michelle Frost, who herself was spiked, but she worked in a lab, and she's created these tests where people can get tested, and find out what was in their body. There's a few kind of laboratories in Cork that can do it, so we are speaking with them to see if they'll take this on, even as a pilot. I mean, what I would love at the end of it is to realise there's no spiking. Wouldn't that be amazing? And then we see what's going on. But you keep meeting a wall sometimes about, it doesn't happen in my pub, it doesn't happen in my venue, it doesn't happen here, or all this kind of stuff. And I can tell you, when we started the centre back in 1983, we were told certain things didn't happen. And then when we started seeing men in the centre, we were told, no, this doesn't happen. Now, I think all the institutional abuse really showed exactly what was happening. So I usually just kind of plough ahead, but I can't do it without everybody, without the general public, their support, the politicians' support, the venue supports, all this kind of thing. And then that's when change happens.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, interesting, Mary. Thank you very much for your time this morning. I do appreciate it.
Anytime,
Okay.
anytime at all. Thank you.
Bye bye. Mary Crilly there, who's Cork Sexual Violence Centre spokesperson. She's leading out the most recent calls for action to be taken. And maybe there's some of you out there that have a story about spiking. Whereby you found yourself on a night out and then incapacitated in a way that didn't correspond with what you were drinking or if you were drinking at all. I think it's more widespread than we know. I think Mary's right in that, a venue doesn't want to sort of necessarily admit that it might have happened on their premises, even though if we break through that stigma, it might help us get to the bottom of this. But I can understand where that might come from. But anyway, if you've any experience of that, and I really hope you haven't, but if you have and you wish to share it, 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000. Now, well done, by the way, to Donegal Rose Emanilis, who was on the Rose of Tralee last night. It's a long old show, isn't it? My word, it's long without the news in the middle of it, but you would have to be a real fan to sit through all of it. But anyway, Emanilis did us proud. Well done. The Melbourne Rose, Michaela Whitty, and the Derry Rose, Cara Hamilton, who appeared on stage last night at the Rose of Tralee International Festival, all with Northwest connections. Keep an eye out tonight as well for the UAE Rose, Enya Crone, whose mum hails from Gwydor. So another Donegal connection. If you have any comments on that show, let us know too. But I didn't get to see Emma, and I'm all for honesty. I didn't get to see Emma, but she was in studio with us. Lovely girl. And I'm sure she did us proud. And according to people on the desk there, she did. Now, had this contact from a listener, and I want to read it to you. They weren't able to come on because there were some concerns. We would have had some concerns as well about identification and what have you. But I think it's very, very timely, and I want to read it to you, and I really want your feedback in relation to this or any help or advice that you can offer. And it reads as follows. Greg, following on from the collision at the weekend, as a separated parent, I'm in a very similar situation with my very young teenaged son. he started to hang around with a group of very questionable lads. Now, for the last 6 months, they've been stealing cars just for the crack. My son's 13. His new mates are 23. After the last incident, I took his mobile phone off him so I could monitor his behaviour. He gets it during the day, but I take it at night. On Sunday night, one of the other boys texted him to say he was taking his mum's car after she went to bed and did he want to come for a joyride. The last time they did this, they stole a random car which ended up in the north. The problem is nothing happens to them. My lad was delivered home with no consequences, with the driver awaiting prosecution. He just carries on doing what he does. So in other words, this is when people are caught doing this. This 13-year-old that was in the car dropped back, no consequences. Now, I'm sure Dad, who I'm quoting here, would like to have seen a bit of fear put into him, but clearly not. So, in other words, this is a 13-year-old lad, dropped home, no consequences. Why not go and have the fun? The driver is awaiting prosecution. But reading on here, because me and his mum are separated, it's impossible to get agreement or solid action on his behaviour. I've reached out to social services, who are also very slow to help me get a handle on his behaviour. It's not as simple as parents are to blame because, believe me, I'm doing all I can to get help for his behaviour, but I'm getting nowhere. So this is a dad who obviously loves his 13-year-old son, but he sees him now running around with older boys. They're nicking cars or taking cars from within the family. They're going joyriding. We'll probably hear appeals later on the show from Angada Síochána that could be part of this space. We simply don't know. We had a whole spate of car break-ins last week. And let's face it, you know, if we have four or five Japanese imports being stolen, they're not being driven around Letterkenny at 25 kilometres per hour. So it's only a matter of time. It's happening here, isn't it? Maybe not on the same scale we're seeing elsewhere, but why are these cars being nicked? And you get five, six, seven, eight of them nicked in the course of a couple of weeks. So we need to sort of not other this situation and realise that, is this happening on our doorstep? Here's a dad who's obviously a very caring dad, split up with his other half. He sees what's happening. You know, he probably sees what happened down the country as a foreshadowing. But what can he do? The guards just dropped the kid back. What can they do? What powers do they have? Social services are reluctant to get involved, and it's complicated by, sounds like, a breakdown of communication between mum and dad. So what do you do in that situation? How do we support parents to support their children? Because kids up here want the TikTok views and likes as well. Thanks so much to those of you texting in so far this morning on drink spiking. That lady is 100% right. I was spiked a few years ago and my daughter was spiked as well. This happened to us in Letterkenny. An awful experience. Another, is there any actual concrete guard evidence that this spiking is happening? The way people are throwing drink and dodgy unknown drugs into themselves is a bigger problem, I think, Noel. That is part of the problem, you see, because I think there is a wee bit of victim blaming can go on here. Of course it's happening, it is happening, but sometimes it could be, you had too much to drink and now you're saying you've been spiked. But I've spoken to people on this program and they're on their third or fourth drink. They know themselves. They can have a couple of drinks and they don't collapse. And it is happening. And I think if we kind of put it down to what you're saying, we'll never help the victims because some of them are getting assaulted as well as everything else. On the issue of councillor security, councillors drawing down security payments. This is public money. It should be in the public domain. We should know what the money was spent on and were the receipts produced. Well, yes, it is. That side of it's covered, right? You can get literally specifics down to the cent of what was spent, and the council has on record receipts for that. So in terms of accounting for that money, that is not an issue. Morning, Greg. Would you mind to put out a wee appeal? Two items were misplaced during shopping in both Lidl and Tesco on the previous two Fridays, the 7th and 14th just passed. A pink raincoat with a hood and a walking stick. If any kind person picked them up, would they please hand them into Tesco or a premises of their convenience? Thanks a million, Greg. So they've just lost two things in short shrift there. And it is a walking stick and a pink raincoat with a hood. Clearly keen to get them back. And I am sure they are out there somewhere. It's just a case of us finding them and connecting them with that caller. On the car culture, when I worked in Dublin for about 30 years or 30 years ago, the stealing and burning of cars was always an issue night after night. It's taken to now to actually do something about it. And I think this, I understand exactly what you're talking about. And since cars were created, people have been stealing them. The thing is now what's promoted is the risk, the evasion from Gardaí, the driving up the dual carriageway because they know the Gardaí can't follow them. Up the motorway, sorry, I keep saying dual carriageway, but the motorway is what I'm saying. You know, that is an extra layer of danger and perhaps arguably more difficult to counter. Another caller says... Greg, this morning driving tests in Buncrana have been cancelled for the next 3 days. I think it's important to recognise the work the RSA has done in recent months to bring driving test waiting times down. We've certainly seen an improvement in Buncrana, and that's very welcome. The difficulty with this is when tests are cancelled at very short notice for a learner, a driving test is often the culmination of months of lessons and preparation. They may have arranged time or work off college, organised a car and insurance and spent extra money preparing for the day. Sometimes cancellations are unavoidable, but losing 3 days of tests will also have a knock-on effect on the waiting list. The important thing now is that those learners affected are given new dates as quickly as possible and aren't left waiting weeks for another opportunity. Yeah, indeed. Common sense text there. Garda Brendan O'Connor is, of course, a Donegal Garda and former president of the Garda Representative Association, and he joins me on the programme now. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Greg.
Right. Now, what is your reaction to the Garda representative, the senior Garda reaction to the awful events we saw on the M9 in terms of the wording and the support that's being offered in terms of training and what have you?
Well, I suppose what has been said now, and the minister have come out and has acknowledged that the GRA are making very valid points, and there is now a commitment from the Garda Commissioner to roll out some form of pursuit training. So we, of course, have to welcome that. We have to be mindful that there are families grieving, but we would say that, you know, we have flagged this so many times, and you know, nothing has been done. Has it taken something like this and previous incidents to actually focus the minds and realise and deal with this deficit in training that is putting literally the lives of citizens at risk and the risk the lives of road users? So something, we believe, something more can be done. The challenges, of course, are huge. The risks are massive. It's very hard to navigate a strategy or a policy because there's so much danger involved. But other jurisdictions have managed, and we're not unique.
Mm. I've spoken to you in the past, and it is many, many years ago, about the lack of training up here, you know, for Gardaí to be able to, you know, respond, say, for instance, with the lights and sirens on. Is that separate, or does that sort of talk to a historical shortage of training right across the board for an Garda Síochána?
Yes, there's definitely a huge critical lack of training for driving, but certainly the whole thing is tied in together. And I think, you know, what happened down in Athy is a horrendous incident. And, you know, people in Donegal might think we're very far removed from it because we don't have, you know, gangs on the motorway of with stolen cars going around sprinkling houses. But, you know, reckless, dangerous driving on the roads and using vehicles in such a manner is a very serious problem up here. And while the vehicle mightn't be stolen, I mean, some of the driving, and every listener to your programme will know that and hear the noise at night and see the marks on the roads. But we have a huge culture of young men who are out there engaging in absolutely crazy, reckless behaviour. And also, you know, the guards are not in the position to respond and can't really deal with it. And the public are frustrated. They're ringing in, reporting it. So maybe this conversation will educate everybody. But I think it's maybe a moment for people to reflect. And those cars in Donegal, they may not be stolen, but there's family members, there's neighbours, people know where they're being stored and know who's out doing this behaviour. So this is what can happen when people act in this manner on the roads. And I think people should reflect on that and maybe think that, you know, what's going on the roads of Donegal isn't a million miles away, and the potential for something like this to happen is there.
Listen, obviously, extra training would be, you know, very, very welcome. Any training would be welcome. But my observation, though, of a reality here is this. I don't think there's any pursuit training that would we would want to see Ungada Shiokana chasing a vehicle the wrong way up a motorway. And also to the, no matter how you do it, using spike strips, for an example, would require a member of the force to be facing a car doing potentially 150 miles per hour the wrong way up a motorway. So with all the training in the world, we are actually going to have to come up with a different way to counter this culture, this trend, because you can't be trained to deal with some of the things I've just mentioned. And I would not like to see any members of Ungada Shiokana, because I've seen from some US evidence that it's highly dangerous throwing spikes out as well with a speeding oncoming car. So we need to be looking at this beyond those measures, in my view, Brendan.
Yes, look, it's a very wide issue, and you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but we can't police our way out of every problem, because, you know, the police can't solve this alone. But there are, you know, there are problems with the Garda training and our Garda operating systems, because if you consider it, it would never, ever, ever be safe, as you say, to pursue a vehicle down the wrong side of a motorway. But I mean, if we have a situation where other Garda who are on train are prohibited from turning on their blue lights when they're in the vicinity, you know, I mean, if you're driving along in your car at night, and you might know what's happening because it's evolving quickly, but if you see a lot of blue lights and activity, you're going to be more vigilant, you're going to slow down, you're going to be aware of a possible danger or whatever. So there certainly we can improve protocols and manage the situation better. But just denying that the problem exists and not addressing it is not a solution. No, there's an element of burying our heads in the sand from those who are responsible for making decisions, because, you know, individual Gardaí, their decision making, as I say, is always scrutinised, but the policy makers, we never really hear from them, or is there any accountability or any transparency into what is feeding into their decision making and justifying it.
And one of the things I would like to see change is this reactive policing. And it's not just in the area of policing, it can be across various subsections of government, in that we have been talking about this for a very long time, Brendan. And I'm not saying if your calls and the calls of the GRA had been acted upon, this wouldn't have happened. But we need to start listening to people who know what's going on and being proactive.
Absolutely. And as I say, this is a very, very complex issue. And I mean, part of the problem, as you say, is I'm not saying a guard on a school visit would have prevented either. But we, as you say, we've gone to this reactive policing. We used to have a situation where the guards were out and about on the ground, embedded in their communities, communicating, you know, and there's an education piece here. I mean, these young people are not speaking about the specific men who lost their lives, but these young disillusioned men who are, you know, participating in this culture and getting sucked into it, you know, they need to be engaged with, they need education, and they need to know the possible consequences, because I'm sure nobody would ever want this to be visited on anyone. But, you know, unfortunately, it's going to require education, culture and changes, as you say. Policing has to be more sophisticated and adaptable. We need to reach out and relate in some way to young people. But there also has to be some manner of managing situations where there's an imminent and very real risk to members of the public and to their lives, as we saw unfold on Saturday night.
Thanks, Brendan. Got a Brendan O'Connor there. And also, to what technology do we have in place, or can we employ that if such an incident as this is happening, that we can very quickly stop traffic in a certain direction. And I don't mean the direction that the joyriders, horrible phrase, would be travelling in. There's lots that we need to be looking at, because that's the second incident in a short amount of time. A caller says there are various community cars, Garda cars, that are different to the well-marked patrol cars. These community cars cannot do patrol checks. It's a waste of resources. Undercover cars are also different. I know the argument is it could cause anyone to pretend they are patrol cars. Could Brendan clarify if there's a difference in these cars? I've lost Brendan there, so I can't get an answer to that. I have seen undercover cars. They normally have the lights in the grills and they can activate them. But then sometimes undercover vehicles might be used to try and detect drug dealing and are for intelligence purposes and not necessarily to chase at that point. So I don't know the ins and outs of that, but we'll definitely try and get some clarity in relation to that. There's also operational, the sort of, I'm sure Gardaí don't want to give every operational advantage away on the airwaves either. Lots of you messaging in on the car culture. Could we wrap it up in that, I suppose? Simple, Greg, just fit motorways with spikes that would burst the wheels if they're going the wrong way. Is that simple? I mean, I suppose you wouldn't need them very frequently, would you? Has that been employed elsewhere? I don't know. Doing storyline on Fair City on young drivers on scooters hassling locals and driving on footpaths to frighten people, doing drug deliveries as well. Guards can't touch them because they're minors. The law needs to be changed. And that really is about offering them support to give them a chance to rehabilitate. We can't give up on people, but hitting the parents. But these situations are often very, very complex, you know. Greg, those lads in the car weren't out looking to get a late night McDonald's. They were out to cause mayhem. It's the frontline emergency services and the victims in the other car that should be the focus of people's attentions and prayers. Quite. But we have to figure out what's going on. How do we stop it? Because if we try and avoid conversations when we need to be having them, we'll never get to the bottom of any of this. What I'm trying to say is what we need to talk about is what is causing this, what's driving this, what can we do to stop it happening again? That is not for a second to not be thinking about the victims. In fact, it's actually almost uniquely thinking about them. For that father worried about his son, maybe something like Community Restorative Justice Ireland could help. Not sure about Donegal, but they're a group in Derry. Yeah, indeed. I know separated custodial parents have a most difficult job to do in parenting, working, studying, etc., but they cannot parent alone. Many children have no mother or father figure to keep them positively in line to stop or intervene from criminal and risky activity. This is part of the problem inherent and growing in Irish society. Maybe when two parents split up, it should be mandatory that they attend a mandatory child-centred co-parenting when apart training course. This could help to stop this poor parenting. I wonder what listeners think. What about that? This might be seen as an overreach, though, by some. If you have a compulsory sort of state mandatory child-centred co-parenting when apart training course, but you can see the logic of it and how it might work. I think you also have to factor in that sometimes kids, when they get to a certain age, can play parents off each other too as well, you know, which can complicate relationships. So throw that into the mix. Hi, Greg. For the listener having issues with his son, has he tried the Sally rod? Usually it works well. That would come out once. And then the mother would say that the father's beaten the child and he would no longer have access to that child. So that's not going to work, is it? But I appreciate where you're coming from, the old way of doing things. I've noticed a lot of posts on Facebook recently of people parking badly. Now, it hasn't worsened. These parked like a knob Facebook pages pop up, and then whoever's updating them loses interest and then they go away. And I think what you're seeing is the re-emergence of some of these Facebook pages that someone's taken an interest in. But anyway, I've noticed a lot of posts on Facebook recently of people parked badly. Can we just think that maybe it isn't that simple? Someone could have received bad news. They could be trying to get a child or disabled person out of the car. It's not that simple, and to shame people and have their number plate on display is horrible. The language on these posts is also utterly atrocious. I agree with what you're saying. You don't know what's going on. You don't know the anxiety, the stress, or worse that the public shaming could do. I think the number plates should be obscured, honestly. I think it's quite irresponsible and potentially illegal to be sharing them, showing the number plates. But I can understand how people can be quite moved, but you need to understand as well that sometimes everything is not quite as it seems. The fuel protester says the listener took care of themselves and forgot about the ordinary people who supported them. Home heating oil prices never came down. Yeah, I get where you're coming from. A caller says, recently there's been a spate of children going missing in the northwest. It's no different. It's almost a monthly thing now. Most of these children are in care and do not come from everyday families. This is never made public, and I think it should be, because the question is, why are they going missing, and is the care... is there issues with the care? I get where you're coming from, and that's a complex issue. And one, really, I'd need a little bit more time to dig into with you. Life is not simple, you know. Some of us are lucky in that life, despite the usual challenges, can be pretty structured, pretty level. But for some, it's not. And for some, there are really difficult challenges. And for those people who give up their time to care for others, it's not simple either. And as I say, that's a comment that we'd need to dig into a little bit more. But I think a bit of understanding and thorough thinking, you know, you might realise that some situations are incredibly complex and complicated. We're joined in the studio now by Minister Catherine Arda, who's Minister of State at the Department of Justice, Home Affairs and Migration. Minister, thank you so much for calling up to us.
Greg, thank you very much for having me.
It's good to have you with
today,
us.
Today, beautiful Donegal.
Yeah, exactly. And you're not a stranger to the county, are you? You've connections to it.
No, my husband is a Ballyshannon man.
That'll do.
Yeah. So
it's tenuous enough.
I know, I do feel for, you know, Donegal being split in terms of South Donegal. And
it is a weird
Donegal.
One, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's unfortunate. Poor old South Donegal are always left to their own devices. But I'm here to champion the cause.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you are up, it's a business trip. What is your agenda? What are you going to be doing whilst you're here?
So I'm in Letterkenny today, primarily to meet the staff and the workers and the volunteers in the Letterkenny Youth Diversion Project. It's one of our biggest Feroiga projects in the country. Now, at this stage, there's 94 youth diversion projects across Ireland, and we have nationwide coverage. But I think it's just really important for me as a minister with delegated responsibility for youth diversion, just appointed at the end of May, to meet every project across Ireland, just to get a real sense of, you know, the clients on the ground and meet the staff, hear the issues they're facing, and try and get a sense of what we can do better. In the next few months, Greg, we're going to be launching a new strategy for youth diversion. And I really want to have, you know, the information so I can have a practical input into what we need. You know yourself in terms of the awful tragedy that happened in the roads yesterday.
Well, that's what I was going to say to you. And I do recognise, of course, Minister, that at this stage you're out there, familiarising yourself as much as you would want to. I know you're not coming in with your eyes closed, don't get me wrong, but with the whole space. And you can't be getting on the ground, can you? But I do think that this sort of part of your portfolio is critical. When we move forward in many different directions to try and avert, young people, feeling left behind in society, and then of course also young people getting involved in criminality, and then eventually those awful scenes we've seen. There is a role here, an intervention role, rehabilitation role, and I don't think we want to throw the baby out with the bathwater either. We have to do it all, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And just while we're discussing that awful, tragic accident, I just want to convey my sympathies to the family travelling to a wedding in the United Kingdom. To think about, you know, you'd be getting in a car, excited about going to a wedding, and for this to happen to them and their family members, it's
just...
You can
only imagine the moments.
It's just awful. I think the whole country are really, you know, in mourning over this. Obviously, there's also been a loss of five young lives that we have to think about as well. But we can't sort of, you know, sanitise this. Driving down a motorway the wrong way is, you know, you're turning a vehicle into a lethal weapon. And we have to look at how we address that. And I think the minister is doing that. There's talk of a standalone offence of driving a car lethally with intent. And also further legislative provision to support Gardaí with their pursuit training so that they have more protections in terms of decisions they make. And I was listening to a member of the Garda Síochána, I think Brendan was on before me, and he gave some really interesting anecdotes and testimony about the feelings from the GRA in relation to this and their calls. And we have a new commissioner, and he seems to be doing, you know, really, he's got an awful
because often,
start.
You know, you get representative association, you get the media, and you get the minister, or in your situation, Minister for State. And there's this sort of given that we're all pulling in different directions or scoring points or, you know, the GRA's. It's not that. We are all of the same broader Irish community, and we all want to see an end to this. And however we get there and what we have to do to cooperate and collaborate or listen to each other, that's what we have to do. This is a societal issue.
And unfortunately, this tragic incident, I believe, like, we're at that. I do believe we're at it. And I think the minister and the commissioner and the GRA at this point in time are very much singing from the same hymn sheet when it comes to trying to tackle this. And as Brendan said, it has to be tackled in a multi-departmental way. You know, it's not just about guard resources, it's about transport, road safety, it's about education, it's about my little part of youth diversion. It's about like social media companies playing their part.
Well, that is something that needs to be done today or tomorrow. I was saying a little earlier on, Minister, I don't like to talk about something that I haven't looked into. I searched one video of this type of behaviour. Now, I'm talking about stealing cars, purposely trying to evade Gardaí. Watch that video for 10, 15, 20 seconds, and every second video now on TikTok are these instances, either trying to evade Gardaí in scramblers, in cars, hotwiring cars, and the way the algorithm worked, TikTok believed I was interested in it and just kept feeding me these videos. Now, say I'm an impressionable 13-year-old, thousands of likes on these videos, hundreds of comments, get in there, lad, go on, lad, fair play to you, lad. TikTok can stop that today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know,
you know, whatever we're doing, that's the first protocol, because that's actionable right now.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with you. And I have discussed this with the Minister O'Callaghan, and I understand the Gardaí have already been on to Commissioner Naman, and Commissioner Naman are the state agency responsible for interacting with social media platforms. So they would know the right designated person to talk to within the different social media platforms. And we know at the moment that the social media platforms are in breach of their code of conduct. There's already a code which stipulates that you cannot glorify or amplify criminal and dangerous activity.
They're doing that,
and they're doing that with impunity at the moment. And it's, you know, it can't be stood for. And I do know that it's obviously not a Department of Justice matter. It falls under the Department of Communications. But I do know the Gardaí have been in contact with Commissioner Naman. And I also noted that there are various accounts have been suspended of these young people. But it's frightening. It seems like they think they're in a game.
But you see, the thing, though, the way the algorithm works, Minister, is, and as I understand it's a different department, but they can, a new account can pop up. And because of the way the algorithm works, that instantly gets traction.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, I have to build up a new account and blah, blah. You suspend that account, you start a new one, and instantly TikTok's pushing that content and it's back up to the thousands of likes. But as you say, it's multifaceted, and I think everyone needs to be pulling in the same direction. Just returning, though, to the work of youth diversion projects, the one thing we don't possibly see enough of is the positive output from them. You know, young people that had their lives turned around have went on to be, you know, perhaps team leaders themselves, gone on to have very productive lives. Would be interesting to get more of those stories, because it's happening, and it's kind of happening underground to some extent.
Yeah,
but I'd say there's fantastic work.
You're absolutely correct, because when I last visited, I was in the Tipperary YDP, and I got to meet some of their ambassadors. So they have like mentoring projects within the YDPs, which are really heartening, where you have young girls and young men going on to do fantastic things, go on and complete third level education, and they're bringing up younger people in the town, and they're fair juice them. They're staying involved with the Youth Diversion Project to act as mentors, and it's really heartening to see that. But we do know that youth diversion works. We know that we're seeing a huge increase in the population cohort between 12 and 17, but the amount of people who are engaging with the Gardaí Síochána is staying the same. And that is very much due to the youth diversion projects that have had a huge impact, along with government funding. But what we want to do now, we need to double down, and we need to look at early intervention. And we talk about early intervention across the sphere. We talk about early intervention when it comes to disability services. We talk about intervention when it comes to, you know, education,
health.
It works. That's why it works. So what we're seeing in some of these targeted YDPs is we're seeing on-the-ground workers targeting families. So it might be the case that like an older brother or sibling or parent might have been involved in criminality. So they're targeting the children and just bringing them into the youth diversion family. And it's really having a great impact, because you don't want to, it's too late when they're already embedded in crime as teenagers. You need to get them between, you know, from the ages of 8 until, you know, and direct them away from the path of crime. And that takes resources, and it takes committed individuals, which we have on the ground. So I'm going to meet the staff in the Letterkenny YDP today, and I have no doubt that the work they're doing on the ground is, you know, fantastic. But it's not to say, as your previous speaker said, that you do have a similar issue. He was explaining in Donegal, especially in relation to young men, you know, racing on the roads, and he gave the example of skid marks or you know,
donuts
on the beach, donuts on the road. So there is there's work to do here. So the idea that youth diversion is not impactful is wrong. We need to continue and double down on our work when it comes to youth diversion.
Yeah, and I don't think we wouldn't. I'm saying this, and it's not popular, but I'm not. We don't want to be blinded by condemnation either. Too, we need to strike now whilst there is a conversation and figure out what we can do as a society, as a government, as a police force, to try and prevent this stuff happening going forward, whatever it might be. Because I said earlier on last week, I think we have community guard information coming up after you now. You know, 6 cars stolen. And they're not being stolen for the shopping run. I'm not being facetious, but, you know, it's only a matter of time, and this can happen in any community. So that's good. It's nice also. I think it's a great boost for these projects to actually see a minister come up. Because you can demonstrate what you're doing, and you can speak to you directly about where there might be gaps or where funding, a small bit of funding, might be able to make a big difference. So you can't beat that close-up contact. I know you've done an awful lot of work too on the very important Cancer Survivors Bill, the Right to Be Forgotten Bill. This is something we've talked about extensively on this programme, as you know. People feel they have their lives back effectively and looking forward to the future, but unfortunately we're being disadvantaged. Is that in force now?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of my biggest...
The one you're most proud of.
Well, you took
the words out of my mouth. No shame in that game.
No, absolutely. It's something I was working on since 2022. I think I may have been on this show.
I think you were.
Yeah, in relation to it. And thanks to, I suppose, media outlets like yourself who promoted it and kept it on the agenda. Because without everyone working, you know, in the same direction, these things don't happen, because you need the pressure from the media, you know, to see them come to fruition. So I was very fortunate then to... it was obviously, my bill was taken on as government business during the life of this Dáil. And when I was appointed as a minister, I was fortunate enough to be able to cover the Department of Finance on the day that was finally passed through the Senate. So it was a big day, you know, personally, but ultimately for all the cancer survivors and everyone involved in getting it across the line. And it was signed ultimately by Catherine Connolly into law. So well done to everyone involved.
I know you've a busy day. I shan't hold you any further. Minister Catherine Arda, Minister of State at the Department of Justice, Home Affairs and Migration. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91 26025.
Tuesday the 18th of August, 23 minutes past 10. It's time for this week's Community Garda information, and we're joined in studio by Garda Padraig McFadden from the Letterkenny Garda Station. Good morning, Padraig. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you in. Right, let's get straight to it. And our first appeal is in relation to an assault in Letterkenny.
Yes, Greg. So Garda in Letterkenny are seeking witnesses in connection with a couple of alleged assaults, incidents which occurred on the Gartley Road, Letterkenny, at approximately 10:25 p.m. on Sunday, the 16th of August. Two women sustained non-life-threatening injuries as a result of these incidents. We are following a definite line of inquiry, and as part of our investigation, we appeal to anybody who may have travelled between Ballyrain and Kiltoy roundabout between 10:15 p.m. and 11:15 p.m. on that date, who may have dashcam footage to make this footage available to us, or if anybody witnessed these incidents, can we ask them to get in touch with Gardaí and Letterkenny on 0749167100.
So these, as far as we're aware, are two separate assaults in and around the same time in the same area?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
Okay,
so
right.
It was at Gartley Road, yeah.
Okay, an assault being investigated in Letterbarrow as well.
Yes, that's correct, Greg. So Gardaí are also appealing for witnesses in connection with an alleged assault that occurred at the car park of the Church of Holy Redeemer in Drimarone in Letterbarrow. This happened on Wednesday the 12th of August at approximately 3:30 p.m. A man is believed to have been assaulted by a number of males at this location at that time. He was taken to hospital to receive medical treatment for serious but non-life-threatening injuries following the incident. We appeal to anybody who may have witnessed the incident to get in touch with Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 0719858530. We are particularly interested in hearing from anybody who may have travelled that area or any of the roads in the general area between 3 p.m. and 4 p.m. on that day, and may have dashcam footage to make this footage available to us. Any relevant information may also be passed on via the Garda confidential line on 1-800-666-111.
Right, broad daylight to an unusual location. So if you were in that area, something would have stood out. And Garda obviously looking For information in relation to the movement of people or vehicles in the general area across that time frame. So if you can help, please do. Ramelton next, an assault there on the main street.
Yes, Greg. So Gardaí are also investigating an alleged assault that occurred on Main Street, Ramelton, on Wednesday the 12th of August between 3pm and 4pm. A man was reported to have been assaulted by another man at that location between those times. He sustained injuries which are non-life-threatening in nature and as a result of the incident. We wish to speak to anybody who may have witnessed this incident or to anybody who may have travelled at Main Street or Melton between the hours of 3pm and 4pm on August the 12th who may have dashcam footage. Anyone with relevant information is asked to contact Gardaí in Milford on 074-91-53060.
OK, again, broad daylight in a busy area. Let's go to Dunloan now and criminal damage from earlier this month being investigated.
Yes, Greg, so an investigation is currently ongoing into circumstances surrounding a fire that occurred at a vacant derelict house in the area of Rerk and Shaskan in Dunloe. This happened between 3am and 5am on Tuesday the 11th of August. The fire services attended the scene and extinguished the fire, but the property was destroyed, Greg. Nobody was injured. We appeal to anyone who may have been in the area of Mean Moor, Dunloe, between those times, who may have dashcam footage, to make that footage available to us. If anyone can assist us with our investigation with any relevant information, they're asked to contact Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071-985-8530 or again the Garda Confidential line on 1-800-666-111.
Criminal damage being investigated in Castlefin too.
Yes, Greg. So we're also appealing for witnesses in connection to an incident of criminal damage that occurred at the Diamond in Castlefin in the early hours of Sunday, the 16th of August, between approximately midnight and 12:30 a.m. An argument is reported to have taken place on the street between those times and is believed that this is when the damage may have been caused to a parked car of a local resident. The passenger side door of the car was dented and a flower pot was emptied out onto the roof. We appeal to any motorists who may have travelled in that area of the Diamond between those times and may have dashcam footage to make this footage available to us. If anyone has any relevant information, they're asked to contact Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071-985-8530. Or again, the Garda Confidential line on 1-800-666-111.
Now, car theft in the Port Roads area.
Yes, Greg. So Gardaí and Letterkenny are investigating a theft of a car from a business premises on the Port Road, Letterkenny, opposite the ATU. This happened in the early hours of Wednesday, the 12th of August, at approximately 3:40 a.m. The car in question is a Fiat Doblo, registration number 05LS3264. We appeal to anyone who may have travelled in that area with dashcam footage between 3 a.m. and 4 a.m., to make that footage available to us. We are particularly interested in footage or sightings of a male on foot in the area who was wearing dark coloured shorts, a grey top around that time in question. If anybody has any information in relation to this incident or in relation to the current whereabouts of the stolen car, we ask them to get in touch with Gardaí and Letterkenny on 074-91-67100 or again via the Garda Confidential line on 1-800-666-111.
Okay, and I believe the Fiat Doblo is a Japanese import vehicle.
Yeah.
And we did have very specific advice in relation to those cars. And I'm not saying it's all connected to this vehicle either, but if you want to listen back to the podcast of last week's episode, you will hear specific security advice, because sometimes these imports don't have all of the security that other cars might have. And I'm saying that's not the case per se in this situation, but just to be on the safe side to completely brief yourself with what you might need to do. Right, road traffic collision at Lisfannan Beach is the last appeal here, isn't it?
Yes, Greg. So a collision that occurred between two vehicles in a car park at Lisfannan Beach, Buncrana, on Friday the 14th of August at approximately 11 a.m. The driver of a parked car returned to find a note on her windscreen from another driver to say that the damage had been caused. Unfortunately, the contact number that was provided will not connect. So we appeal to the other driver involved to get in touch with Gardaí and Buncrana on 074-93-20540. So the matter can then be resolved, Greg. If anybody witnessed the collision or anybody was in the area at the time with dashcam footage, we also ask them to contact Gardaí and Buncrana on 074-93-20540.
Yeah, lots of people see lots of things, and maybe the owner of that vehicle missed a digit by accident, and now would be a good time to come forward and correct that.
That's it, Greg.
Right, now, accommodation scams. You know, scams happen all of the time, but we do see certain scams raise their heads at certain times, and there can be such desperation in terms of trying to acquire accommodation that we can let our guard slip in relation to some of the obvious checks and balances we need to be employing. So this is just a reminder. We can be trustworthy people, but unfortunately, life can leave those people the most vulnerable at times. Right, so I suppose this is all in the context of results coming out shortly.
Yeah, that's it, Greg. So the Leaving Cert results are due later this week, and that will soon be followed then by college course offers. First time and returning students to third level education will be seeking accommodation in the coming weeks. So we do advise the public to be careful when looking for accommodation, to be aware of rental scams and how they work. Students seeking somewhere to live may even be sent a false contract to sign or false keys to make the scam appear more convincing. Students are advised to research rental prices in the area where they are looking to be looking to rent, and to be wary of price. If the price seems too cheap, sometimes it's too good to be true, it usually is. Never agree to rent a property, Greg, without having seen the property in person first.
Now, this is where we can get a, because it can be a 7 or 8 hour, 10 hour round trip.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, the person can be very, very convincing, and it can, you can use all the excuses in the world not to go down and check, but critically, you want to go down, you want to meet the key holder, you want to see them open the door, you want to go in.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, if you're going to rent somewhere, you want to see it, you want to make sure that it's actually there.
Yeah.
A lot of the times, sometimes it's not with these scams. We'd ask people as well never to use cash to pay a deposit. Do not make any payments until you've been given a written lease or until you've ensured that the key fits the door of the property. Should you fall victim to a rental scam or any type of scam, please alert your bank immediately. Also report the matter to Gardaí. If you've already transferred money online or if you think that your financial details have been compromised, then time of the essence, so please do not delay in making your report. There's a website there, it's a Fraud Smart website. It's a great source of information in relation to all things fraud. It offers great tips on how to be savvy when it comes to looking for student accommodation. And it's, let's give the website out. It's www.fraudsmart.ie for further information. There's lots of information on that website that can assist people.
Yeah, for sure. All right, thank you very much indeed. That's Garda Pádraig McFadden from Letterkenny Garda Station. And that was Community Garda information for this Tuesday, the 18th of August. It's back live for you on the programme after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. Just to remind you, if you missed anything or you want to listen back or get some extra detail, it's going to be on the podcast of this show on our website from about 11:30. But also you'll be able to watch it back a little bit later on our Facebook page and on Garda Síochána Síochána Facebook page. Now, the Artificial Intelligence Collaboration Centre at Ulster University, in partnership with AI for Collective Intelligence, will host a free public forum in Derry, Londonderry, this September, exploring the growing impact of artificial intelligence on society. I suspect the good and the bad. Professor Michaela Black is Professor of Artificial Intelligence at Ulster University and AICC Principal Investigator. And it's a complex, complicated, exciting, scary space, isn't it?
It is that, and it can be. AI's a great technology that has the opportunity to bring us a lot of great opportunities for both citizens and for society and environment, but it has to be done responsibly and ethically, and that's why we want to open up this sort of citizens forum. And it's important that the citizens' voice is listened to as we move forward with this new technology, because it is rapidly changing all the time.
So what will this forum, what shape will it take?
So there will be a panel available at the forum, and they're everything from government body, industry. We're hoping to have a citizens representation too, and some academics involved, and members from AICC. They will have some insights on how AI is impacting them in society and how it's impacting industry, how it's impacting education. And then we're going to have the opportunity for the public to ask questions of that panel. It could be questions they have around concerns of their use of their own private data. That's very often a very common one, particularly in healthcare. Or they could have questions about how do they know that they're even using AI? Because a lot of people, unfortunately, there's a lot of training that we still have to do around the citizens, because we're not always aware when we're using AI. Sometimes it's very well hidden and we're actually engaging with AI and not actually made obvious to us. And we have to think about things like that and how we keep our, particularly our young people and our elderly people, safe when we're doing that.
To some extent, in some areas, is the genie not out of the bottle, though, in that these companies were formed and instantly went into scraping social media, scraping artists, back catalogues, books, films. To some extent, really, some of this conversation is 3 or 4 years old, it would seem, because we weren't aware, but this is what was going on.
Yes, and there are some companies, I'll not name any, that are currently being pursued for doing unethical and irresponsible AI and using and lifting data that was not theirs to lift, that was personal data of hers and was never consented. There are legislations around it. The Republic of Ireland has a very good, strong EUA Act that is very well enforced and it's very well informed. We do have our own legislation here in the UK, but again, it's an existing legislation that's trying to adopt AI. So the key thing is that we try to ensure that people think about doing AI responsibly and ethically. So we're making available very good open source tools, like from the AI Responsible Hub within AICC. Companies can check just how responsible and ethical any projects that they are doing or any data that they're going to lift, how ethical and responsible that is. And we're trying to keep those companies safe because the fines will be hefty for anybody that does lift this and not think about the consequences in the future of not
the
having
the only thing concern consent. I have, and we see it with a case that's beginning with Facebook right at the moment in the United States, where they're facing $1 trillion claim for how they behaved and how their algorithms work, is that it seems to me companies like, you know, Facebook, Meta more broadly, TikTok, X, that they almost factor in within their profits to fight these claims. So whilst we talk about robust laws and robust enforcement, at the end of the day, these companies, I think, factor all of that in and can tie the entire system up for months, if not years or decades.
That is very true, and we are seeing that in some companies. And again, that's where the legislation needs to learn and move faster, because the AI technology is becoming very valuable for some companies, and their irresponsible use of it is. So the legislation does need to keep up with that. And that is things that the policy members are looking at, particularly within the legislation, and how those fines are appropriate. And maybe it is that it's not a financial fine that we need to endorse in that company. There are other factors that we may need to think to bring in into implications for people who just keep continually breaking the rules, but enabling enough money to come in to factor that in.
It'll be interesting, won't it, to hear, I suppose you will hear from the panel about opportunities and challenges, but it'll also be interesting to hear from the floor, you know, what people see as, it's probably going to be challenges. I think the opportunities are becoming, you know, somewhat clear, but people, you know, it'll be interesting to see what new challenges people see and what that conversation might throw up.
Definitely. And I do think, unfortunately, a lot of the language being used around AI and no guidance to the citizens is causing a lot of confusion and worry. And citizens' data is their data. It's very valuable to them. It's their own personal data. So we need to be able to help people to identify in forums like this. Let's identify what their challenges are. And then with the appropriate policy people, educators, etc., then we can offer up some training. So you'll see there is already some citizens courses available both in Ireland and the north of Ireland. But again, what do we need to add to those to make sure that those queries, concerns, and any new concerns coming up, that we're addressing those and making sure that the citizens feel informed enough to make an informed decision about when they want to use AI and when they don't?
I think an interesting question I would like to ask the leading voices, particularly in this space of academia and government, either now or let's fast forward 5 years, is AI controllable? In other words, I'm not saying it's Terminator 2, don't get me wrong, but I mean that, you know, will governments actually be able to put in guardrails and checks and balances? Would it be controllable? And I'm not really quite sure that it is. We have somewhat responsible companies like, you know, Google or ChatGPT, but there are an awful lot of operators that aren't, you know, showing any self-constraint. And I just wonder if it is controllable.
I think if we use it ethically and responsibly and keep humans in the loop, which is one of our big advocates, that has oversight. There will always be, and we've seen it with any technology, you've seen it when the World Wide Web came out, there will always be actors who will use any new technology in an unethical and unresponsible way. AI is no different to that. We do need to ensure that policy people keep ahead of that and the legislators keep ahead of that. But what we need to try and do, and what we're trying to do through AICC and other research centres, is that we're trying to make sure that the companies who want to look at use of AI, particularly new adoptions of AI, and they're a bit nervous of that, how do they use tools that keep them informed about what they're about to do? Is it ethical? Is it not? Is it sustainable? Because a lot of this AI, while we encourage people to adopt it, can we sustain it come 2030, 35?
But have we really seen a technology? You mentioned the web there. Have we seen a technology whereby some of the companies that we're talking about now are intertwined with countries' defence systems, or where you have economies like that in the Republic of Ireland, which you know, relies very, very heavily in this space, i.e. to keep the bills paid? Because, you know, we host a lot of these companies, we do have these EU regulations, but still we have no control and have exercised zero effective control over any of these companies. At the moment, you know, the government is humming and hawing about, you know, TikTok promoting a lot of these videos that very tragically led to the fatal collision down the country over the weekend. You know, so there's an awful lot of talk and very little action is the point I'm saying, Professor. And these companies have incredible influence. Look at the influence of Elon Musk on the US government. Look at how OpenAI is integrated. Is OpenAI integrated into the US defense system? And we're seeing similar in other countries as well. It's tight. It's going to be tough to see any government take a stand, I think.
I think that's true, but I think that's why it's particularly important that we listen to the public. And public forums of this nature are really important, because that public voice can really enact the legislators to do something about this. What we've just seen in the past week from TikTok is atrocious. How we're having that control over young people and encouraging them to do things of that level. So I think it's really important we start bringing in the public voice and the public citizens. And it's through that voice, they have the control to change this and make the legislators listen. What is the impact that that's having on their personal life, their family, their children? And we need to listen to them, and that needs to be fed forward to the legislation, and in that way inform how the legislation changes to take that control back and give it back to us as citizens.
It's clear from our conversation that it's going to be a fascinating conversation in the Guildhall at the Guildhall Square in Derry on Thursday, the 10th of September. It runs from 6 to 7.30pm, as we heard from Professor there. There are going to be leading voices discussing this, government, academia, industry, and critically from the floor, public questions, public concerns. You have to register aicc.co/public forum. I think it's going to be really well attended. It's nice to give people a bit of notice. And as I say, it's a fascinating conversation. And thanks for joining us on this topic, Michaela.
Thank you very much.
Or is it Michaela?
Whichever you prefer.
What do you prefer?
Michaela's fine.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you so much.
Okay, look after yourself. That's Professor Michaela Black, Professor of Artificial Intelligence at Ulster University and AICC Principal Investigator. Let me see, on the issue of AI, quick to the text lines, fair play to you. Are these real texts or AI, Caroline? They're real? Okay. The problem is AI is being controlled by business and countries competing with little ethics or morals. Safety would restrict their progress, so to keep ahead, they will ignore it. That is, in a nutshell, really where I think we are. I think big tech has very cleverly found its way into government in terms of influence, but also usage. Then the Chinese think, are we falling behind the United States? And then they start at the highest levels integrating AI companies into government almost and into some of the most important areas such as health and defence. So I'm afraid I would have to agree with you in relation to that. A caller says the companies running AI are extremely unethical and the people have no control over what is being rolled out. Using AI is essentially cheating, believes the listener. And what happens when AI gets out of human control? The people who invented it say they're sorry now that they did. A bit like the guy who invented the atomic bomb when it was too late. Yeah, some have, it has to be said, not all, but I do take your point. Right. Connor Pope is consumer affairs correspondent and Price Watch editor at the Irish Times. Good morning, Connor.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good. Just learned this morning of a new €2 handling fee to be imposed on all online purchases from outside the EU. Where did this come from? Was it announced today? Did you know it was coming?
No. I mean, this has been coming down the tracks for a long time. And it kind of, the European Union and the European Commission has been struggling to get it over the line for a long period of time, because there's kind of a dispute, or kind of negotiations need to take place between the Commission and individual member states about how the charges are going to be imposed, where the money goes. Does it go to individual revenues, or does it go to the European Commission? So there was a lot of things happening, but according to OnPost, the date for that new handling fee of €2 is likely to be November the 1st. And that means that from November the 1st, every purchase from outside of the European Union will be hit with this charge. And it's important for your listeners to remember that that's not instead of, that's as well as the €3 per distinct item charge that was imposed on purchases from outside of the European Union at the start of July. And your listeners will remember that that charge was effectively a €3 charge per item on products bought, as I say, from outside the EU. So if you bought like two white t-shirts and a pair of jeans, you'd be hit with two different charges if they were coming in the same package. And this new charge, as I say, will be on probably the individual parcel, irrespective of how many items are in it. But that's not yet clear.
I read a paragraph and reads as follows: Irish consumers who shop online with operators based outside of the European Union are set to be hit with the further charge. But is it not the case that operators based outside of the European Union have copped onto this to some extent and ship within the EU?
That's a very good point, because a lot of major online retailers have warehouses in the European Union. So they might have them in the Netherlands, or they might have them in Germany, or they might have them in Ireland. And if they are, if the product's destination before it arrives at your door is within the European Union, then you don't pay the charge. Now, that's not because there's no taxes on those products. It's because the taxes have been paid at source in the warehouses, or by the companies who have the warehouses in those various jurisdictions. So it really does depend on where the product originates. But the European Union isn't doing this. You know, it's doing this for a very specific reason, because it wants to create a more level playing field between retailers, online retailers based outside of the European Union who are shipping into the EU, and retailers, indigenous retailers, who are clearly struggling in the face of this competition. Because you must remember that an awful lot of the time, a lot of these products that are being shipped in from outside of the European Union are being shipped in at dramatically lower prices than Irish retailers or French retailers or Dutch or German retailers can afford, can charge. And the European Union is really concerned about it. So the charge in July only really impacted goods that were under €150. Prior to July, all goods that were cost less than €150 didn't attract any duty. Now they do attract that duty of, as I say, €3 per item. And this is going to be an admin charge to allow collection companies and to allow revenue officials in various jurisdictions to cover their costs. So it's not a tax. It's an admin charge. It's separate from the tax, but the net impact for the Irish consumer will probably be the same.
Yeah, but there's lots of consumers perhaps haven't even felt that €3 charge, depending on what the order and where the order it from, and they may not see this €2 charge either, but they might as well. So knowledge is power. Connor, thank you.
No problem at all.
Look after yourself. Connor Pope, who's consumer affairs correspondent and Price Watch editor at the Irish Times. Now, sad news, actually. We just received an email from the Money Doctors. And a regular guest on this programme, Mr. John Lowe, has passed away. You will remember him. He comes on and talks about his book. We'd have him on once or twice a year. Lovely, lovely man. Always very kind to us. I didn't know him personally, but you kind of get to know someone or what they're about with regular interviews. So personal finance advisors, Money Doctors, have announced with great sadness the passing of its founder and managing director, John Lowe, widely known to the Irish public as the Money Doctor. He passed away peacefully on Sunday at St. Vincent's University Hospital, surrounded by his family and friends. And as you know, for decades, John has been one of Ireland's most trusted and familiar voices on personal finance, a big fan of the pension. Pension, but also offered some great advice for, he would have been on with us at this time of year with students going on to third level for the first time, etc. So very sad to hear that. He was born in 1951, very young looking man. Very sad to hear of his passing, I really am. So I thought I'd pass that on. And we're thinking of his colleagues at Team Money Doctors, but also his family and his friends. Okay, sad. Let me get back to some of your comments as we head towards the end of the programme. And Greg, I often wonder, did anyone ever watch The Terminator or any other of these sci-fi movies? Because who knows what's down the line? Everything online is totally open to hacking. We can see that already, never mind when banking and digital is included. That doesn't even cover the cost to everyone from the data centres. And if you want to see in China and other countries how they pay for items with their hands and they have chips installed, you know, never has it seemed that a movie franchise is, we're seeing life impersonate art. The only thing that is different now from what we're going through in the Terminator films is whether or not they take over, because everything else is in line with that. On the issue of the taxes we were just chatting about, we will continue to be taxed until we say enough is enough, and I don't think the people are there yet. Everything we buy, food, fuel, clothes, electricity, etc., also when we sell houses, land, and even in death, it won't stop until everyone says enough. I wouldn't mind if money was being used wisely, but the squandering is criminal, inverted commas, they say. Yeah, it is, but we have to pay for services, but it does feel unfair, and so on. I get where you're coming from. Greg, read the terrible tragedy on the M9 and the subsequent plans of the Minister and the Garda Commissioner to attempt to stop this behaviour by chase training the Gardaí. Very early this morning in a station, I heard a member of An Garda Síochána Síochána say they are not going to put their own lives in danger chasing criminals that when caught will get no punishment by the justice system because they are juveniles. And I did say that in my interview with Brendan O'Connor there. I didn't hear the interview that you're referencing. All the training in the world, Gardaí are not going to be following cars the wrong way up a motorway. So it's going to have to be something else. On the issue of e-scooters, a lady came down our Main Street footpath in Buncrana yesterday on an e-scooter. No high-vis or helmet. Are the new rules implemented or not? And if so, why is this allowed to continue? Well, the idea being if An Garda Síochána member saw them, they would be the e-scooter would be confiscated and they would be fined instantly. Do you report it? It's up to you. I don't know. Listen, any comments we didn't get to, we'll get to tomorrow on the programme. Thank you so much for listening. We really do appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.